Thank you, Nicholas, and thank you, Olga. Whilst everyone's taking their seats, I'll just get started with the introductions. And thank you again to Nicholas and the whole Capital Link team. Congratulations for the event today, organising today's forum and agenda as usual. Athens is probably one of the highlights of the conference season, and certainly no exception for this year. Just to introduce myself briefly, my name is Jaisal Chohan. I'm head of international finance at Dickinson. And as usual, I think for the bank finance panel, we have a stellar list of international banks with strong ties to the Greek market. So on that note, I'll briefly introduce each of our panelists. So to my left, we have Philip Wunschmann, head of shipping at Berenberg's. Next to him, we have Chris Conway, Managing Director, Global Head of Transportation, Export Agency Finance at Citi. Then we have Christos Tsakonas, Global Head of Shipping at DNB. And last but not least, we have Evan Cohen, Managing Director, Global Head of Maritime Finance at First Citizens Bank. Right, on that note, we'll start with a usual question, which is a relatively open question to each of the banks and the panelists to let us know how they saw 2024 and what they have in mind for the year ahead. Usually I would probably start with a bit of context to this question about the market, the state of affairs. It seems to be different every single year with something new. I think maybe this year it probably started with our prior panel, but I think we'll just simply need a scorecard of how many Trump references and geopolitical aspects that we might have. But on that note, I think I'll leave it fairly open and pass on to Philip in terms of how did the bank do over the last 12 months and what are the expectations for shipping portfolios and the shipping market for the year ahead?
So now, thank you. Good morning. And coming to last year directly, just a little review. It's maybe something to mention in these days where stability and reliability are a bit in question sometimes. It's 60 years now of uninterrupted history here in Greece, and last year we could ring the bell and have 200 clients here in Greece. So we are a bit proud on that, and I'd like to share this with you first. Why do I tell this? Most of these clients are not lending clients to ours. As you know, we are transaction bankers first and foremost, and very proud of that, making your transactions running around the world smoothly and efficiently. That is at the heart of what we do. So in many lendings, you might see Berenberg running the accounts or doing other stuff. It's also gives a bit of the picture of last year. The last year, lending was not a priority for many of you. So for us, the typical shipping client here in Greece, but elsewhere as well, was rather on the investment side. So we did a lot on the investment side for clients looking for diversifying investments into for their liquidity. This was one of the topics we were busy with. On the lending side, it's fair to say that you have very efficient and well-working Greek banks here locally. So lending in a traditional asset-based lending way we did and we still do is something probably where your Greek banks for now are more competitive than we would like to be. So our main occupation on the lending side last year was introducing a new product, which is advising Japanese financing into the European market. So we could close the first four or five deals, JOLCOs, Japanese lease, to European clients. And what is the role of Berenberg? I think for many Japanese institutions, it's difficult to understand the European market. There's a cultural gap, definitely, and we have many clients for many years. So the KYC, the onboarding is done, and basically these institutions like to hear from an institution like Berenberg that we have a long-standing relation with the client, we know how the client's track is, and so on and so forth. So that was a helpful on that side. On the other side, for many European CFOs, it's also a hassle to travel 6 times to Japan and then hoping for the next time to do the first deal. So we could be a bit of the efficiency leader here, offering something where we have like 10 to 15 names in Japan, providing term sheets right away, and then discussing it with the client, with the Japanese institution. So that was one thing we did. On the lending side, traditionally, we did deals outside Greece. So 300 million was basically the target we had and which we achieved. So less repayments in the second half of the year. So that is basically a good news for us, as that was a very painful exercise before, that so many early repayments came in, but that was less the case in the second half. So maybe that's for 2024 for the first moment.
Great, thanks, Philip. I'll pass on to Chris.
Thanks, and thanks to Nick for inviting me here today. Always a pleasure to be back in Athens. 2024 began with us absorbing a well-publicized change in the organization, which included some changes in the shipping franchise. My focus is purely on export agency finance, and indeed in that department there were also some changes, but I think that as we look back at the results for 2024, we see that those changes were very beneficial. We are, as an organization, throughout the firm, much more client-focused, and I dare to say much more nimble. We streamlined processes to make us more efficient, and that showed up in the results for the end of the year. So we were able to grow the business, both in terms of total assets. We were able to grow the earnings, all of which are good news. And I think those of you who know us know that we are not just a global bank with a single product. We have a wide product suite, and the intention is, of course, always to deliver that to the entire bank. But we have to do that, of course, keeping in mind the focus on compliance, sanctions, and everything else that is becoming, it was certainly during 2024, raising some challenges. We cannot afford to make a mistake. We also saw significant competition from Chinese leasing houses for the business that we typically look at as our bread and butter. They have significantly reduced their costs of doing business, although now I think that there are some geopolitical issues which might dampen some owners' enthusiasm for going down that route. Indeed, we probably saw yesterday in Tradewinds owners who have got very large orders now deciding that they will diversify their book to place orders away from China into Korea and other places. So we are seeing that there is some impact, I think, on the new administration in the US. People are wondering where that will go. I think that will change the landscape for us. We certainly saw that the prepayment of debt increased competition. We've always had healthy competition with our friends and colleagues here on the table. We welcome that. It keeps us sharp, but that also did mean that for 2024 we had to write much larger tickets to stay in focus and be competitive, and pricing certainly came in quite sharply. But we ended the year very well. We're pleased with where we are. We have got a great group of clients, and hopefully 2025 will be an exciting year for us.
Great, thanks. Christos?
Yeah, thank you very much. As Chris said, a lot of common threads, you know, across the banks. I would sum them up as three really, you know, main topics that have kept us busy. The first one, I would say, we've seen an unprecedented level of lending activity. The geopolitical uncertainty has led to strong markets the last couple of years. This has led to companies managing very wisely their balance sheets, prepaying debt, reducing leverage. So this has meant that all banks' balance sheets have been reduced, and that has forced us to be super active to try and replenish our books. And that certainly has been the case for us. I cannot remember the last year we were as busy as we were last year in terms of new transactions, but it felt a little bit of, you know, running to stand still. Despite the very, very high level of new activity, the portfolio has not really increased in a significant way. But it's good to see that companies are managing their balances in a very prudent way and paying down debt. That has been the first really area of concentration. The second one, we have Basel IV, which is upon us now, so we've spent a lot of time retuning our models and reshaping our strategy to be able to remain competitive under the Basel IV framework. And the last point that has kept us very busy is on the advisory and the investment banking side. It's been a very active year for M&A. I can't remember the last time we had so many active dialogues about consolidation, so that's quite encouraging. But also the bond market has been quite active. As you have seen, you know, the past weeks we've had three or four very big deals that have been happening on the shipping side, and that is something that has also kept us busy. So a bit of a mix for us, but the overriding principle is very, very high level of activity across our various business verticals.
Great. Thanks, Christos. And I'll just pass on down the line to Evan.
I guess the first lesson is I should come up with three good points like Christos did. So I quickly come up with my three good points, which is we're focused on lending. We've had our best year ever last year in lending and our best year in Greece, our most important market in lending. So we did a lot of business last year, especially in Greece. We're focused on a small group of owners. It's been a great fit so far, and I think a little bit of it has been getting our, it sounds funny, but our foot in the door, because the competition from the Greek banks is getting tougher and tougher. So we want to be here before it gets too tough. We want to have those relationships and business relationships already. And so far, so good. So thank you to everybody in the audience.
Great, thanks. And I suppose picking up on a few of the points that were mentioned, I think there's a, you know, clearly there's quite a few positives and also still challenges as well, and perhaps slightly more diverse challenges than before. I think one of the themes that I did pick up is that I think references to the liquidity, early repayments, and how this has kind of affected the lending side, in the sense that it takes billions of dollars worth of deals just to stand still. So, you know, that seems to, and I think, Philip, you mentioned that it was more challenging in the early part of 24 and that shaping. So I'll leave this question open to the panel, but in terms of how that seems to be changing, whether challenges and uncertainty perhaps mean that it's likely that relationships with banks will, for traditional bank finance, will strengthen as there's potential difficulties, geopolitical or otherwise. Philip, would you like to go?
Yeah, liquidity still is very high. We see this as an aggregated sum, which is our early indicator of our 4,000 accounts for shipping clients, and the volume of liquidity on those accounts has not gone down over the last 12 months. The contrary, it has rather be stable, a bit grown. So I cannot see that liquidity is an issue right now. On the other side, looking ahead, we would expect this year to change a bit, in the sense that, first of all, we have a normalization of key markets, like in the bulk market, and also maybe later this year the container market might settle a bit. So that is what comes in, it might be less. At the same time, new buildings, which have been ordered over the last 2 years, have to be paid now, installments are coming up. So probably liquidity will be used for investments this year. That's at least what we would expect. And that might also give us a positive note on the lending side, because I think liquidity in a even more volatile market is king. And so you will probably like to keep your liquidity as long as you can. And that is why I guess that the debt-free existing fleet might be relevered to an extent. So that might be one option for you. The other thing is obviously talking about new building financing. As we have seen, many have ordered, have opened an account for that, but have not, let's say, agreed on the financing so far. So that might be another activity, including pre-delivery financing, by the way. That is our view to this year and with regard to liquidity. Not an issue, but becoming more of throughout the year.
Yeah, thanks. I think the point about liquidity is a good one. It's what is delayed financing decisions amongst owners for new building orders, where they don't feel that they have to be in a rush to secure post-delivery financing, or indeed take up pre-delivery financing, both of which we offer in abundance. But I think there's another side to liquidity, which is at the banks themselves. We all face liquidity challenges in various currencies. Fortunately, as a US dollar-based bank and within a US dollar-based industry, we can be very, very competitive in from the liquidity standpoint. But we are seeing that you know, some of our competitors are not so fortunate. So that changes the playing field a little bit. It's slightly different in euros. There aren't that many euro financings, but in the cruise industry, these are vessels, after all. They do finance them in euros, and that makes banks who perhaps are not competitive in dollar funding more competitive in that sphere. So I think there's a liquidity two-way street. It's both on the standpoint of the owners themselves and on the part of the banks.
Well, I would say that there is no doubt that most of the shipping markets are correcting or have already corrected, and that's the cyclical nature of the business. But ship owners have played it beautifully this time. If you look at capital structures, you know, debt is very low, liquidity is high. So they are entering a down phase of the market now from a position of strength. I think this is going to keep prices at relatively high levels. Already we see that the prices for second-hand ships are not really reflecting the earnings that we see in the market, and that's on the back of people having strong balance sheets, not being forced to sell, but also people jumping on opportunities, you know, very quickly once they come into the market. And I think, you know, for probably for the first time, ship owners have been, you know, very, very thoughtful of what they've done with the liquidity. Maybe the technological uncertainty has kept them back from reinvesting, you know, very big amounts of money. But they are entering a correction in the market from a position of strength, and we are very happy to see that. And of course, you know, be there to support them in this next phase of the cycle too.
So I have the advantage of going last now. So the from watching our clients, the ship owners, we could have started 24 and wondered, okay, are we going to have business to do because there's so much liquidity on their side? And the answer is that's not been a problem. So the big advantage has been the owners, our clients, have been looking for lower leverage. Okay, that's great. That works well for us. On the other hand, they're asking for looser covenants or longer profiles, very conscious of the break-even rates, also very intelligent approach. So that's where we start to compete with the other banks. So the deals are there for us from the bank side, and we see just very intelligent strategic moves from our clients. Great. And then from the American bank, so one of my friends noticed there's two American banks on the panel this morning. No, the liquidity from the bank side is not the issue either. We come, First Citizens coming out of this retail and deposit history. So our biggest issue is not the funding or the liquidity cost, is making sure they still want to do it with a small shipping team in the bank. So far it's not been a problem. Thank you.
If I just that, because you made a good point about competition and price competition, and I think in this phase of the market where people are competing for deals, it's very healthy to see price competition. But what concerns me a lot is when people start loosening credit structures at this point of the market. That is a challenge because, you know, markets will correct. It will be much more difficult. And if you have loose credit structures, which we see creeping in now, this is what causes problems and gets banks into challenge. Not the low pricing, but the very loose, you know, credit structures, which are starting to creep in now. So that's something to be very mindful of from a banker's perspective.
Great. Thanks, Christos. And Evan, did you want to add to that?
No, just I fully agree. That's we all want it. We all like what we do. We like our day job, and it's not going to be all about the pricing. It's going to be when we have a headache because of the looser structure. So the lower leverage works fine at this point in the market because we all are – one of the few times I'm above the average age in the room. So we've seen what happens next in this story. We've seen this movie before.
And I think I'll probably stick with the topic of headaches then, seeing that you mentioned that. And actually, I'll also stick with the American banks on the panel. It's probably a sign of the times that even today's forum and our agenda actually was reorganized a little bit compared to last year, in the sense that we have the geopolitical discussion first and then the energy transition second. Maybe it's not coincidence that the finance topic came third. But I suppose in that context, and again mentioned in the prior panel in relation to drill, baby drill, and what's happened over the last 12 months, more than 70 national elections in different countries around the world, not least the U.S. Election last year. So I'll start with you, Chris, if you'd like to give your perspective on the challenges, and I suppose particular focus on the geopolitical aspects.
Thanks, and I guess I alluded to some of the geopolitical issues that we as an American bank may face. There's been nothing pronounced to regulate internally what changes we should make, but we are always watchful about whether or not there's going to be some regulation that puts pressure on our exposure in China or Hong Kong. So we have no restrictions on us today, but I think people are watching that space fairly closely to see whether or not there might be some something from the Trump administration that causes us to withdraw. I don't think it would be a total withdrawing, it would be a repositioning. We at the bank, I think a couple of years ago, did move people out from Hong Kong, then they moved back. That's about the only signal, I think, that we see from a geopolitical standpoint. Our clients manage through these issues as they occur, and we support our clients and follow what they do. I think the sanctions issues that may emanate from this new administration are something we have to be very careful about. The name of the game is compliance, 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 rather than drill, baby, drill. And, you know, we at the bank just have no appetite for non-compliance. So we will watch, and we have a big team that looks out for the sanctions issues to make sure we're fully in compliance.
Great, thanks. And I'll pass the same question to Evan.
Sure. As soon as I said thank you for being last, I'm now not last anymore. I'm going to focus on the sanctions. It's the least aggravating one. The sanctions is the first burden is on the owner. So the owner has, and the ship owners are very adaptive. As soon as there were extra sanctions put on in the past year, they have a process and a procedure, and they have their standard form from their lawyers and from the insurance companies, and we process that. And we piggyback off of that and make our standard approach internally for compliance, compliance, compliance. Absolutely. So to the extent it's communicated and the owner, our clients, can adapt, we can adapt very quickly right behind it and manage it. So if there's a switch, a new country is sanctioned or a sanction's removed, we'll be able to react and handle it. That's it.
Great. I'll move the question to slightly more the European perspective. I think both Christos and Philip mentioned almost a slight change in the kind of international and global relationships. Philip, you mentioned with Japan and how that's changed, and the potential dynamic that perhaps moving with investments in Korea and other areas that are perhaps easier to manage the compliance aspects. Is that something you're seeing as a challenge, or how do you face that?
I think we have learned a lot since the outbreak of the Russian war in Ukraine. In that sense, the whole community is well educated and well prepared. So we see that as up and running. New challenge I would rather mention, and we can call it geopolitical, but what we at least now learn from the new US administration is that there's also a call it cultural aspect. And I think we have to be careful about this, what has been after the Second World War, the rule-based world, which is based on certain rule, international private law, international law at all. And in a world where at least some of these things are questions, I'm asking myself, what does it mean for shipping that that is running around the world and is based on a certain reliability on certain rule, arbitration rules, and so on and so forth. So at least, yeah, let's face that there is a challenge going forward if this Western world is kind of multipolarizing. So not talking about China here, which we know as a risk, and the country risk of China is there. You mentioned diversification out of China. Yes, that might be a case, but with an order book of 60% plus out of China, there's probably no alternative soon. And with the demographic development in Korea and Japan, I don't see that as an alternative to take over from China. It might be to diversify to some extent, but it's not to take over. So we have to live with the China risk in a way, and as a European community, we have to look at both sides, I guess. And we have to make sure that this rule-based world is still there. I find this existential for shipping.
Great, thanks, Philip. And just to pass the question to you, Christos, as well, and I suppose picking up on a lot of those themes as well, that in terms of, I suppose, the compliance aspects of sanctions and the challenges you see there, but obviously kind of developing that in terms of management of the dark fleet, the influence of the dark fleet, and what impact that's having on financing as well as the shipping industry as a whole.
No, a lot of interesting topics. First of all, when it comes to sanctions, yes, they are extremely important, but yes, they are extremely time consuming for us, but I don't think it is a problem for financial institutions. We have grown used to them now. We have built very sophisticated teams. So we manage that risk in an excellent way, I would say. But also I have been impressed with the way that our clients, especially the segment of the market that we are focusing on, are handling sanctions. They are, I would say, in a way ahead of us as well. So it's not us policing them. It's them doing the right thing and us sort of monitoring and following them. So even though it is time consuming, even though, yes, it has changed the way we work, sanctions is not really a problem. The dark fleet that you mentioned, that is a very big problem. That is a ticking time bomb. That's something that we are all very worried about. We have vessels that are running around uninsured, that are running around in trades together with, you know, ships of our clients. And that's something that keeps us up at night, and it's something that concerns us a lot. And it's something where we want to see much more, you know, regulation around. When it comes to, and I think, you know, Chris mentioned, you know, China, and we see owners and a number of our clients being more skeptical about the level of exposure they want to have in China, including financing. I don't think there is a high probability that there are going to be sanctions or issues, you know, with China directly. I think it's too high of a cost for the world, but it is something that is concerning people. What is worrying me more when it comes to shipping and when it comes to free trade is all this talk about tariffs and all the tariffs that we see being introduced. All of a sudden, the world seems to be a much smaller place. And this, of course, will have a negative impact on many segments of shipping. Car carriers come to mind straight away. Containers come to mind straight away. Maybe less so for tankers and dry, but still, increased protectionism is a challenge. And the other thing that worries me a lot, or at least, you know, we're skeptical about, is that we see Europe jumping ahead, you know, very quickly, you know, with regulations, not necessarily very well thought through ones, which could have implications about the way trade, financing, and ship owning is moving geographically, probably towards the east, as we are over-regulating in the west. So these are all issues that, you know, we are trying to analyze and understand. But it's a very dynamic landscape at the moment.
And I suppose just moving on further from I suppose the sanctions compliance and also our prior panel in relation to the energy transition as well. Obviously, that has been quite a key part in terms of the financing aspects and ultimately financing that energy transition. I think that work has still been done. It seemingly is potentially being influenced by political factors and potentially the approach or contradicting approaches that are being vocalized. I think, as a few of the panelists have mentioned, it will take some time to see that. But Christos, I'll actually come back to you in terms of just giving your views on the relationship with finance and the financing of the green transition and how that momentum potentially will be affected, and you know what options are still there for owners looking to finance greener ships.
No, we are very happy to see that people are still very, very focused on energy transition, but I think the ambitions are now becoming much more realistic than we've had in the past. You know, people have set, you know, their targets. People are starting to understand what is achievable and what is not. But what we see is that people are being much more realistic about the speed with which change is going to happen. People are becoming much more realistic about the cost of the change happening. People are realizing that, you know, you need to share this cost, you know, across stakeholders. People are experimenting with new technologies, but in a prudent way. We see a much more mature approach, you know, to energy transition now than we did a couple of years ago, where everybody thought that, you know, in a couple of years we're going to move to new technologies, all the ships are obsolete all of a sudden. I'm very glad to see owners spending a lot of time to modernize and improve the energy efficiency of their fleet on the water. I think that is the key. We need to focus on that first. And also very glad to see that people are continuing to experiment with alternative fuels, and people are seeking to share the cost across the community for developing this new solution. So it's a very, very balanced approach, which is expected as the thought process is maturing around the transition as well. But you know, we remain extremely, you know, focused on that. We have developed products to assist and incentivize people to move into transition technologies through transition loans, through sustainability-linked loans. So all the tools, you know, are there, and the willingness and the desire is there to move towards a cleaner shipping.
If I may add, there's this other side of the coin, which is the capital which is needed for the industry, and we will have a fierce competition about capital from third-party sources. Not now, but in the years to come. And I think shipping always starts with a negative, being considered from the outside as being dirty, as being difficult with regard to environmental standards. And I think, therefore, the regulation might slow down, that might be the case, but investors will look critically at this. And so in the competition for capital, I think it's still worth and valuable to keep what we have started here to make the transition happen. Maybe at a slower pace. I agree with Christos, more realistic view to the things, but don't expect the capital to be uncritical about that, at least what we see here in Europe.
Great, thanks. And I'll just bring Evan in, if that's okay, just from, I suppose, from the US perspective on how you see any approaches changing. Still early to tell. What your view is on that?
No basic change to the approach from the lending side. Other than, well, actually, it's a fairly big change. We're engaging with the owners more. So back to basics. There's two things. How is the owner, our client, thinking about these changes? Why are they making that strategic choice they're making? The new build design or retrofitting, whatever they're doing. So we have the luxury of picking who we work with, and we like the way most of our owners are thinking about this and why they're making that investment. So one, what's their thinking? Two is, how are they getting paid back? So what does that do for their revenue generating capacity? Does it mean they're doing it for a Cargill charter that'll pay them more because they have certain specs? And that for us is basics. So what is your client thinking, and how are they going to pay you back? And so we're seeing a rational approach to it. So when the pressure comes from the charterers, it'll go to the owners, and we will lend.
Great, thanks, Evan. And I mean, it's probably not surprising that as we get towards the end of the discussion, that One thing that I've missed is maybe the discussions from 10 years ago plus, where it was about chip finance fundamentals and less about politics, science, and those things. But whilst we are running out of time, I think I'll just leave a relatively open question in that, as all of the new challenges have come out, with that obviously comes opportunities as well. So I'll quickly give each of the panelists a chance to give their views on what they see as the opportunities and the positives for shipping and Greece moving forward, probably very quickly across. Chris, do you want to start with that?
Sure, and just as one of the other panelists was surprised that it took so long for the T word to come up, I'm surprised that the N word doesn't come up at all in the discussion on decarbonisation, and I'm talking about nuclear. It is the one fuel that has the possibility to be zero emissions of pollution, and it has a long life, and it can avoid lots of expenses. But of course, psychologically, people have to get to grips with whether or not it's socially acceptable to have them on board vessels. But I do think that is an opportunity that needs to be more thoroughly explored than I see it being done today.
Okay, great. Christos, do you want to have a go at opportunities that you see?
I think it's just a fascinating time to be in shipping. You know, you have all the geopolitical uncertainty, and shipping is in the middle of it. You have all this technological revolution, and shipping is, you know, sitting in the middle of it. You have, as I said before, shipping companies having the healthiest capital structures we have seen in a very long time, looking to take advantage of opportunities. And, you know, we are the banks here facilitating and making things happen for them. So it's an extremely exciting and fascinating position to be in. So I'm happy to enjoy that ride.
Evan, would you like to have a go?
Me too. No.
We'll enjoy it together.
It's always been fun. There's always a change coming. And someone used the word nimble. But as long as you can adapt quickly and be nimble, you can... we'll still be here next year.
Great. And Philip?
Oh, my God. Nothing much to add, but I think it will also in 10 years we will talk about the asset, the sponsor, and the cash flow. So I think this will not change really. And maybe the importance of the personal relation and to understand our clients in the best way might be more important in the years to come when the world is a bit more diverse, let's call it this way. So it's good to have you and to have these kind of conferences, Nicolas, because I think meeting and getting to know each other is still flavor of the day and will remain.
Great, thank you. So just to wrap up, and always nice to finish on a positive note, that there are still opportunities out there, and certainly the banks and the panelists have weathered a lot of those storms with the local market here. So I think on that note, it's just for me to thank each of the panelists today and the audience, and to pass back to Nicolas. Great, thank you everyone.